Okay, well, I want to thank everyone, all of you, for joining us here this evening. It's September 15th, 2016, and this is Dr. Will Cuddle. Delighted to be with you on our World Peace Diet Circle call. I think this is the 65th or something like that, circle we've done over the last, I think we've been doing this now for about over 5 years, and every third Thursday. And it's a real honor to be able to participate in this way with people who are really serious about connecting more deeply with the possibilities of transforming ourselves and our society through compassion and justice for animals, and deepening our connection with our own spiritual connection with the earth, with each other, and with the whole web of life here. Madeline and I, as you may be aware, are still in the 11-month lecture tour that we're doing. We call it the Vegan for Life Tour, and we left in, around November 11th, I think it was, in 2015, and we'll be back around October 11th of 2016, so that's only less than a month away, which is amazing. It seems like we've been on this for quite a while. It's almost like a time warp here, living in our rolling home after being back, after living in our home in California for a few years. So to be back in our rolling home for these last 11 months has been terrific, or 10 months. We still have one more month to go. It's been going very, very well. I'll talk a little bit about that. And, of course, the whole point of this is for us to have a chance to share about the most pressing, interesting, and provocative issues that we're facing, whatever, and really, and whatever is in your heart, too. So remember, we can press star 6. You can press star 6 if you'd like to raise your hand, and I can see you here on the screen. All right, so here we go. So what we'd like to do normally at the very beginning is take a few minutes and just tune in. So wherever you are, if it's comfortable to just relax and close your eyes, that's great. If not, then keep your eyes open and pay attention. But we'd like to just take a moment and turn our attention in some way toward our connection with the earth. It's beautiful and abundant and celebratory and just magnificent planet that is our school, I think, in many ways. We're here to learn. So we give thanks for our connection with the earth and all that the earth represents and the infinite nurturing power that sustains life here. And we feel the connection also with heaven and the creative power of the universe that is the source of all life. And we give thanks for each other and for this precious opportunity that we have to be together on this call this evening and to connect more deeply with the inner wisdom and with the network of caring people, both in the past and in the present and maybe perhaps also in the future, who are working to help to raise awareness in our society about the consequences of our actions and thoughts and words and feelings, our purchases. We give thanks also for the interconnection that we feel with the other animals of the earth, with the turkeys we just heard on the turkey song, and with all the birds, the fishes, the mammals, the insects, all beings of all species, celebrating their lives here, and everyone who's helping to make a positive difference on this planet. There's a tremendous amount of work being done, so we give thanks. Also, finally, just knowing that we're part of an awakening of human consciousness on this beautiful earth to celebrate our lives together, and that all the ripples that radiate out from our being together here this evening will be ripples to bring peace and healing and joy and freedom and creativity and abundance and health and sustainability into our lives and into our world, into the lives of all beings. And so it is. Okay, well, thank you again for We're joining together in this World Peace Diet Circle call. So we have a special guest tonight, someone you hear about. Never actually hear this person's voice very often, but once in a while we hear that this person does have a voice here, various types of voices. Some of her voices are with paintbrushes, and some of her voices are with flutes, and some of her voices are here with vocal cords as well. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute my very, what shall I say, illustrious and talented spouse, Madeline. She's with us now, and would like to share a few ideas after that I'm not sure what kind of introduction that was, but it's just how I feel. You're so grateful to be able to have such a wonderful partner. So this is Madeline, and she has a few ideas and thoughts and things she'd like to share with everyone. We have all our good friends on the line here, and it's just great to be here.
Hi. I like to say hi to everybody. It's really great that you're all here. And it's like the tour is really going and swirling and dancing and sometimes going 100 miles an hour, sometimes a little slower, not that often. But we had a really neat facilitator class in Cincinnati, and I really felt like talking about GMO and all the organics, and like I talked already, but one can never mention it enough, because living out in the world there, it's just so normal not to have an awareness about all these things. I think it's really important to call in, like in restaurants where one goes to eat, because even vegan restaurants sometimes carry GMO products. And they bluntly say it. Oh, no, we're not GMO-free. Like, this would be a good thing. And so we're eating them mostly like oils, like cottonseed, canola, and soy, and all these things, and eating GMO plus playing into the hands of these big companies who spray so much, put so much of these Roundups and all other kind of things, and the bees decrease, the butterflies. It actually smells terrible. I took a walk between these cornfields in Michigan, and it would look so pretty. It's like there are little houses, and then there are some fields, soybeans and corn, and some other kind of fields, and lots of lawns, and then I walked. And suddenly I got this kind of something rough. I started coughing, and it smelled really terribly, like chemicals and all that. I don't know how one can actually live like this, you know, in between these cornfields. So it's like it's doing all kinds of things. So I think we really have to help getting these out of our lives and just questioning, reading labels and all that. So, and this is my main actually talk tonight. I'm just so disturbed how there is so much GMO everywhere, you know, like little kind of ingredients somewhere. Everything is good, and then but one ingredient, the canola oil, not organic, or corn syrup, or any of these. So I think we have to educate each other and get the world a better place and get the bees back and all the insects and the health of us, too, on top. So that's what I like to say. And I thank you so much that you listened to my rattling of GMO, but I feel it's so important. So thank you so much, and I wish you a really great evening with Will coming on now.
All right, thank you. Thanks so much, Madeline. I know this is something actually that I think it actually is a pretty serious issue. Obviously, the most animal agriculture is devastating to our planet. And we just actually yesterday and today here in outside Lansing, Michigan, Madeline was doing her morning exercise driving, and we were staying with some people in their driveway with our rolling home who had a very new just built house in, sort of in the cornfields, which are used for, it's all animal feed, of course. And it was quite an experience, I think, for Madeline to go out on her morning walk and to feel this air that was felt toxic from the whatever it was in those cornfields that are everywhere. They're huge. I mean, it's just huge cornfields. They go on, and the corn is very high right now. It's just before harvesting, I guess. And soy also is just before harvesting. So we've been driving through gigantic monocropped fields of corn and soy, and it's not for humans, it's for animals. So this, recently, I think it was just in the last day or two, Monsanto actually is no more. It's now merged with Bayer, or as they say in Germany, Bayer. So they make one of the largest, maybe the largest chemical company in the world of genetically engineered foods, which to me are really diabolical because, and to Madeline too, obviously, because, they have the Terminator technology seeds, which now farmers can't save their seeds anymore. They keep jacking up the price of the seeds. They require lots of chemicals, glyphosate. I mean, the problem with all the soy and corn and canola and cotton seed, which are the main GMO oils, and grains / legumes, are that they are immune to glyphosate. So there's more and more glyphosate being just dumped into the environment, and this is now understood to be toxic. So there's the toxicity of the glyphosate, which is just destructive, not only, of course, to plants, but is also to animals and to humans. And then on top of that, the GMOs themselves, the fact that these are genetically engineered species which have had inserted into their DNA coding, DNA code that could never get there naturally. How do we, I'm amazed that we actually are tolerating this in our society without much pushback, really. We see in some other countries people get out in the streets and really have a fit, but we seem to just allow it to go along. And of course, our main work is with animal agriculture and the devastating effects of cruelty and violence to animals. But part of it really is, I think, this mentality of violence towards animals that also plays out in a mentality of violence towards ecosystems and towards plants, really. I mean, people talk about, well, plants have feelings too, and that's a good, as sort of a challenge to vegans. Well, if plants have feelings too, then we shouldn't be genetically engineering plants, right? I mean, that's a very nasty thing to do to these beautiful beings, soy and corn and cotton and so forth, all of them, canola. They're being horribly abused, and so as I discussed, some of you may have heard me talk about this idea that since we live in a culture that's oriented at its core around animal agriculture, which essentially has always been men's work from the very beginning, and is based on violence and domination of nature and animals. This orientation and mentality pervades our society today because we're eating animal foods, that now, unfortunately, in many ways, we do plant agriculture in the same way we do animal agriculture as a whole kind of process of domination and of a war, sort of this war mentality of attacking pests and attacking the soil in many ways, just not even really building the soil anymore, just replacing soil with oil and using natural gas, artificial fertilizers, and other additives to the soil, so that the soil is really reduced to being merely sort of a repository for all these chemicals and pesticides and herbicides. So I think this is just a symptom, really, because plant agriculture traditionally has been, and still is, actually for many people, a celebration of the abundance of nature. And this, I think, is such a beautiful thing, going into a garden, into an orchard, or into fields that are lovingly tended and created. We see that we can grow food in a completely different way than in this devastation and violence. And we were really reminded of this recently in London, Ontario. And I think this is, these experiences that we've had with people who are gardening and growing food in sustainable ways, and it's such a blatant, shocking contrast to what we see with animal agriculture and with doing plant agriculture the way we do animal agriculture in this regimented rows, and like we do, how we regiment these poor animals in rows and confine them, and we do the same thing really with the land itself. It's this domination and violence towards the land. And so it's really tragic to see, I think, the effects of this. So what Madeline was talking about, I think, was just how surprising it is to go into vegan restaurants and other sort of progressive restaurants. Sometimes we're with a whole group, and they're having a dinner for us, as we travel around. And Madeline has to ask the restaurant manager, so the oils you're using and the tofu you're using, is organic? Because as vegans, we don't want to support Monsanto and GMOs and the devastation to animals and wildlife that are caused by this kind of agriculture, and we also don't want to eat this stuff ourselves. And it's been kind of disappointing to see that most of the time, many times, they are still using it. Although it's been great lately, the last couple of restaurants we went to, they probably said, no, it's all organic here. And so that's great. And even if it's not organic, we can use sunflower oil or safflower oil or olive oil or other types of oil that are not genetically engineered. But if it says vegetable oil, that's typically cottonseed oil, which is genetically engineered. So I think there's a whole new movement that's happening. And we talk to vegans, and they are starting to make a fuss about this, which I think is a really good thing. And part of it, what Madeline was talking about at the World Peace Diet Facilitator training that we did in Cincinnati, was not only GMOs, but also about the personal care products and home cleaning products and so forth that often contain a lot of toxic chemicals that people use. Even vegans often use these things in laundry soaps and so forth. It's interesting to see how some people can feel overwhelmed if there's just so much to pay attention to. Not only our food, but also our personal care products, cleaning products, and not only food that has violence towards animals in it, but also food that has violence towards human beings in it. For example, a lot of chocolate comes from places where there's literally slavery happening in some of the countries in Africa, and even in the United States, there's a lot of really oppression of migrant farm workers. So to try to buy fair trade, try to buy organic, that's another reason to buy organic, because not only is the environment devastated by chemicals, but also the poor workers who have to work among fields that have been sprayed have extremely high, you know, much, much higher rates of disease and birth defects and so forth. So to kind of, you know, be willing to take on the discipline of reading labels and asking questions and thinking in the bigger picture about our food and every aspect of our food, and not just our food, but everything we're buying, so that we're being as conscious as we can be, and to avoid that tendency that we might have to say, oh, now I'm overwhelmed, like, you know, it's too much, I'm just going to, you know, that was kind of the feeling we had with this one person. She kind of reacted like, well, this is a little bit too much. And I think it's somewhat, quite honestly, it's a little bit of a cop-out, because actually, you know, the underlying idea is that these things are causing a lot of suffering to animals and really to ourselves. And it's not that difficult. Once we understand and make a few connections, then we can be more conscious. It's about becoming more conscious in the way we're living, and that everything we do matters. And I think there's a lot of truth to the idea that however we act in little things, it's how we act in big things. So if we want to have in our lives, in the overall flow of our lives, if we would like to have a sense of integrity and harmony and awareness and so forth, then it doesn't make sense to be, say, I'll be aware in this area and I won't be aware in that area. That area I'll just not care about, you know, because everything we do affects others. And this is really the mentality, actually, of eating animal foods, is that, well, I do care, you know, I care about my family and I care about my neighbors, but I don't ask me to care about animals, and that's too much trouble. So so luckily, I think, you know, people who are attracted to veganism, especially as we go along on this path for this wonderful adventure of a vegan life, as the days and weeks and months and years go by, we can continue to fine-tune our awareness. And we don't have to do everything all at once, but, you know, as time goes on, we begin to understand more clearly and more succinctly how our purchases affect the earth and the animals and workers and future generations, and we move, of course, to a plant-based way of living. We make it more organic as time goes on, non-GMO, I think, as time goes on, of course, and then everything we're buying as much as possible. And not only buying, but also, like, literally not buying things. I mean, to do the best we can to borrow things or buy things secondhand, perhaps for clothing, and other things that we can buy secondhand or borrow from someone instead of buying it, and just reduce this sort of rampant consumerism that, as I point out in the World Peace Diet, is in many ways driven by the animal agriculture mentality of seeing everything as a thing, reducing everything to a thing, and acting in ways where my own welfare is all that matters. That, you know, if I need to be happy, and being happy means buying things that I want so I can be surrounded by the things I want to have around me, and that this is really, you know, how happiness in many ways is defined in our society. That we really do have, unfortunately, still that 1890s gilded era conspicuous consumption mentality. In many ways, it's somewhat mitigated in certain cases, but I think overall the mass media is always pounding away on that, always planting those seeds, and for the mainstream people who are still paying attention to the mainstream media and getting bombarded with these messages, it's still quite a reality. So I think we're very fortunate. Madeline and I think, you know, many of you folks who are listening are fortunate that we've been able to somewhat disconnect from the mass media and forge our own values and ways of seeing, and are keenly aware of the pitfalls of consumerism and how it makes misery for ourselves and for others. But it's still, I think, in many ways, the religion of our society. And I remember I was thinking last month when we were speaking on our third Thursday World Peace Diet Circle call, which was on August 18th, and we were in Rochester, New York. I remember we had just arrived there with our good friends Ted Barnett and Carol Barnett. Ted, actually Barnett, if you have a chance, I don't know if you're all aware of it, but there's this Plant Pure Summit is playing right now for 10 days. And you can listen for the first two. You can register for free. Just go to Plant Pure Summit. And you can listen for 24 hours to each day. There's, I think, about 6 or 7 people who are interviewed. And they're all well-known people in the field of vegan education and health. And you can listen that day for free and the next day for free. But then after that, you have to pay if you want to get the whole set. But what they've done, actually, I just found out from the organizers, is that this weekend, in other words, I guess all day tomorrow and all day Sunday, excuse me, all day Saturday and all day Sunday, so a week from day after tomorrow, this weekend, they're going to open up the entire, all the days, all the recordings of all the speakers for free to anyone who wants to listen to them. So we were staying with Ted Barnett, and he's actually was interviewed today. I think today's Thursday, and about the work he's doing in Rochester. So I really recommend listening, if you have a chance, to Ted Barnett and what he's doing with the CHIP program in Rochester. It's a really great example of a grassroots movement of bringing health into the community there in Rochester. He's an MD, and he sees a lot of patients, but he and his wife, Carol, are old friends of ours, and they have vegan cooking classes, and he's been giving lectures for a long time. And Hans Deal, who's an MD in Los Angeles, started the CHIP program, which means Complete Health Improvement Program. It's an anagram, C-H-I-P. And it's, there's chapters now all around the country, but the Rochester, New York chapter, which is basically being organized by Ted Barnett, is the largest chapter in the whole country. And he's just doing he's doing a big education. They have a class kind of on how to be healthy, heart healthy, and so it's kind of focusing on what Lily Macy calls coming in the sort of the side door, the back door, veganism for health concerns. But of course, Ted and Carol are very much on board all the way with the compassion and ethics for animals, and they're also the organizers of the Rochester Vegan Society, which sponsored the lectures that we gave there while we were there about a month ago. So I highly recommend if you have a chance, kind of register for the Plant Pure Summit and then just check out whichever speakers look interesting to you. There's the usual list of well-known speakers. I spoke the very first day right after Kathy Freston and Hans Deal and right before Miyoko Shinner, who's, I think, pretty well-known and really a wonderful friend of ours who's started this cheese, the vegan cheese company. It's called Miyoko's Creamery. It's in Marin County, and her cheeses are aged and are really, I don't know what to say. I mean, they're like the real high-end dairy cheese, and now she's been very successful, and she's in Whole Foods all over. So it's great to see how well she's been able to position her business and these vegan cheeses. And I'm sure that vegan cheese in many ways has been sort of the downfall for a lot of people who want to go vegan, and they just don't like the cheeses that are vegan. So I think they can't say anything anymore after Miyoko's cheeses. And so anyway, so you have a chance to listen to her story and a lot of other people, see Colin Campbell and Michael Greger and Gil Bernard and lots of other people who are well known, as well as quite a few people who are less well known, like Ted Barnett. I just mentioned he's less well known, but he's still doing a lot of wonderful work in the Rochester area. And but that's the basic idea that I wanted to share about the GMOs. And as we've been traveling on our tour, we've been sort of painfully aware again, because we don't see it when we're in Northern California too much, of the vast monocrop fields that cover literally millions upon millions of acres of land, and just nothing is allowed to live there except for one crop, and the enormous amount of violence that is required to thwart nature's yearning for diversity and for a celebration of life, and to just destroy that into this regimented hierarchical mentality where we see all these poor pigs and chickens and cows and lined up in restraining devices and in cages, and then we see all these rows of corn and soy. It's basically the same thing, and the wildlife is just pushed into the margins of nature. They don't, where are these poor animals supposed to live? It was so great. Right before the call, Madeline and I looked out the window, and we saw a whole tribe of turkeys. And today was the first cool day. It's been really hot. So I'm like, gosh, it's been amazingly hot. This whole, since I don't know what, since June, it's been just hot. or May, I guess. We were coming up through the Carolinas, it was hot, and then into Virginia in the spring, and the whole summer for the most part, it was quite hot, and then even up until, so finally today we had the first, today and yesterday we had the first kind of cool days here, and we had a little fog, right? So, probably enough, this whole band of beautiful turkeys came strutting all around our trailer. We have a little bit of forest here where we are in Grand Rapids, Michigan, by the Unity Church where we'll be presenting here this weekend. And it's just very heartwarming to see these beautiful birds, how they just hang out together. They kind of walk around and eat. It's like us, how we like to eat together. They're doing the same thing. They like to eat together. They just kind of walk around pecking at the ground, and they're all exactly aware of each other. And there's this beautiful kind of loose harmony where they're close but not too close. It's very interesting, just very very heart-touching to see turkeys. And also we've seen a lot of Canadian geese. And I just love watching the Canadian geese also because there's that similar feeling of their, how much they enjoy each other and stay together and then fly off together and land together and look after each other's kids and mate, together, for life. And there's this tremendous ancient wisdom that propels them along in their lives to fit into in a harmonious way into the larger unfoldment of life here. And it's just so repulsive to see how we see them as a pest. Are you sure it's not us that's the pest around here? I mean, if we see them as a pest, then we want to shooting them. And so anyway, our hearts go out to these creatures, and it's really great to see them. I wanted to cover a couple of things today. I wanted to cover a little bit about the tour we've been on last month, and then to also talk more about what I did not have time last month to talk about, which is materialism. And so also I would like to be able to answer any questions that anyone may have. So plus, go ahead, this is kind of an open, free hour we have left now. So press star 6 if you'd like to have me address anything, or if you'd like to bring up something for all the brothers and sisters who are on the World Peace Life Circle here. We're all facilitators. People who are interested, who have gone through, read the book, and who at the Wolfie side, and who are really seriously doing the best we can to help spread a message of wisdom and compassion. So if you have anything you'd like to share, bring up, feel free. Otherwise, I just want to say a few things here about our tour. So the last time we were here, we were in upstate New York, and I just want to say, and I won't go through everything, but we've just had so many beautiful moments in the last month with other activists, people who are World Peace facilitators, or people who are organizers and advocates and activists in their communities, spending time with the Barnetts, with so many local people, old friends, a lot of them in Buffalo. This wonderful person, Tracy Murphy, who founded a farm sanctuary in Buffalo, New York, Asha Sanctuary, where we spoke there, and the folks in Erie, Pennsylvania, who have a beautiful vegan meetup group in Youngstown, Ohio, where there was a spiritual center where we were able to bring spirituality and veganism together in a beautiful dinner. And in the east side of Cleveland, where we worked all together with people who are organizing the Cleveland Veg Fest, which has just grown miraculously in just over a couple of years. I think in just 3 years, they're up to 8,000 to 10,000. I think some huge number of people are coming to the Cleveland Veg Fest now. To Worcester, Ohio, where some wonderful people who are also long-time activists and friends of ours and students and fans, actually, of the World Peace Diet, created a huge event with, 200 people. It seemed like we're there. The place was packed. And then going down again, going back up again to Cleveland and then down to Cincinnati. I want to say a few words about that too. We were, as Mal mentioned, we were in Cincinnati the weekend of September 2-4, doing the OPSI Facilitator Training Program. This is the program where in a live setting go through Friday evening, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday training with us to become certified as OPSI Facilitators, and we had a great group. I think it was 12 or 15 people that went through, and plus we had a number of other people who had been going through trainings partially with Mark Stardina Ferguson through the yoga studio also attending. And so it was it was great. I mean, doing the live trainings is a real love that we have because we can go more deeply into the issues, you know. So it was a beautiful group, and Mark also did some sharing and teaching of vegan cooking methods in the kitchen, and there was a lot of deep sharing that was had, as well as exercises and things. And so I want to just thank everyone who participated in that and welcome all the new facilitators who went through the program. People flew in, actually, from Atlanta, from Baltimore, from Massachusetts and Indiana and Michigan, and they mostly drove in, I guess, from Michigan, Indiana, and Illinois and those places. But it was a great time, and we are going to do, just to let everybody know, we are going to do one more training, a live training. It's going to be on the Big Island of Hawaii the second weekend of December. So if you have any interest in that, you can go to our website to the upcoming events page, and it has the information there. But it's going to be at the Banyan Tree Animal Sanctuary on the Big Island of Hawaii in Kona, Kailua, February 9, 10, and 11. So that's something that I think will be a wonderful experience, because we know the people there. They're vegans, and it's a beautiful sanctuary with just a lot of food that they grow, a lot of trees, and also a pretty neat cave. It's actually a lava tube. You can go down into the ground, down into the darkness, and disappear into the earth. So, and swimming, and hiking, and lots of nice, it's a really nice area. So that'll be coming up too. But that was a wonderful experience, actually, to just connect more deeply with everyone in Cincinnati. Cincinnati's one of our real hubs for the vegan message of the World Peace Diet, and Mark Stardina and Ferguson have been working hard for almost 10 years now, spreading the message and making progress with books, with a vegan restaurant, with a vegan line of foods. All these things are moving forward. Now starting a vegan school is the next thing that they're working on. So we just tip our hats to them. And I know I think Mark was on the call last month talking about this training and the things that they're doing. So, so to kind of follow up on that, the training went really well. We had a wonderful group of people, and it's great to see, I think, in many ways, how people respond to the call, and we find that the vegan movement is continuing to, from my point of view anyway, continuing to mature and grow. We're up against 10,000 years of incredibly stiff inertia. But everywhere we go, there are people, and sometimes it's just people you would never think would be going vegan, but they are. we went from there up to Dayton where we spoke, and then in the yoga studio in Brooklyn, Michigan, and then in this beautiful yoga studio in Bloomfield, Michigan. Johnny Kess, I'm not sure if you're aware of him, but he's got a large yoga following, and the World Peace Diet is recommended reading, I guess, for all of his yoga teachers. It's a very large movement. It was very well attended. And then we went into Canada, into London, and that was amazing. I think we did 5 events over the weekend in Canada. And one of them was an all-day workshop. It wasn't an actual facilitated training. It was an all-day World Peace Diet workshop that we did at a place called the Living Center with a wonderful couple named Lorena and Chantry. Chantry is the fellow who basically created the center 30 years ago. It's actually a farm. It's actually a food forest. Mal and I, sometimes we talk about our food forest that we have in California. We were originally inspired by them because we visited them about 5 years ago, I think?
Yeah.
About 5 years ago. And, just to see, they have many acres. I don't know how many, maybe like 100 acres of land. Chantry has planted literally thousands of trees on this land. And there's so much food coming. And I don't know how he does it. This is Canada. But he's got fig trees just flourishing there and many, many other trees. I mean, it's just really spectacular. And it's a whole community, and it's done as a spiritual act, and it's totally vegan. There hasn't been any manure, bone meal, blood meal, anything. It's a totally vegan permaculture project that just these two people are doing, and it's gigantic. My hat's off to them, really. They're very committed and really bring in the spiritual and earth healing and vegan messages, and they put on retreats there, and they have people coming, and they do trainings in vegan permaculture, and they were talking about how permaculture in general is very antagonistic toward vegan people and veganism in general. That's the whole permaculture community is basically permeated with people who are primarily not convinced that you have to have animals in the system. You've got to have some chickens, you've got to have some fish, you've got to use manure. But that's just the way you do permaculture. You have some animals in there to make it work. And so for them it's been very difficult. It's been pretty lonely up in Canada to do vegan permaculture and be the only ones who are who are promoting this. But I think, the tide is turning and more people are realizing that you don't need to have an animal in the equation. You don't have to have animal slaves and animal suffering in order to be happy and to thrive. We can let the animals fulfill their lives as they did for millions of years, and we don't need to use their manure or other products or their labor. And so to see their play, I highly recommend it. We're thinking, actually, we're discussing it, possibly going back next year or at some point and doing a 7-day to 10-day, a whole like week-long or 10-day training in vegan permaculture, veganism, spirituality with them, because I think there's a lot of overlap in interests and skills and abilities that they have. They also were so inspired, actually. I was really glad to see that. They have started a World Peace Diet study group right there in London that they're going to be having at the Living Center every Monday night starting, I think, in a couple of weeks. So it's great, I think, to see the way that the interconnectedness of these ideas and the cross-fertilization of these ideas inspires people and the web sort of keeps spreading farther and farther out. So, yeah, we gave a lecture there at the university. It's called Western University in London, and also at the Living Center, and then also at 2 different vegan restaurants that they have in London. They have 2 wonderful vegan restaurants. We gave lectures Saturday night and Sunday night at these restaurants, and then came back Monday night and did a lecture in another vegan restaurant right outside Detroit, and it's called Chive Kitchen. So we really get our fill of all the giving lectures at vegan restaurants, and actually we really enjoy it. But it's also good to see the people who are attending these lectures, deepening their understanding of the importance of vegan living. And that pretty much brings us up to now. We're just the last couple of days in Ann Arbor and Lansing, a couple of events sponsored by Veg Michigan. And Veg Michigan is one of the, again, larger vegetarian vegan groups. They have Veg Michigan Veg Fest. It's in the Ann Arbor area every year. It's one of the large Veg Fests in the country. I think they get around 6,000 people for there. So that brings us up to the current thing, and we're just to let everybody know, we're basically right now just diving into a really full schedule. So like the grand finale of the fireworks here, and giving lectures here in Grand Rapids. They're having their second annual Veg Fest here in Grand Rapids on Sunday, where I'll be speaking. We'll be at that, and then speaking also tomorrow in Saugatuck, and then Kalamazoo, and then with our good friend Catherine Perry at Notre Dame, and in South Bend, Indiana, and then in a couple of lectures, and actually three lectures outside Chicago, and then up in Milwaukee with our good, also a friend of ours who just went through the training in Cincinnati, a woman named Sasa, who's a yoga instructor, putting on a day-long World Peace Diet, or actually an afternoon-long World Peace Diet event there at the yoga studio, and then an evening lecture in Milwaukee, and then quite some lectures in the Madison area. There's a wonderful vegan restaurant called the Cheese Factory. We'll be speaking there, as well as at the huge Unitarian church they have in Madison. And then from there we head down to St. Louis, and then from there to Boulder and Denver and Colorado Springs in early October, to Salt Lake City, speaking there, and then on to Reno, and that's pretty much it. After Reno, we're heading back, so we'll be back around October 11th. And then we've just been able to be in touch with folks in China who are setting up quite a full schedule for us. I just posted on our website of about, I think, 7 or 8 different cities in China. Basically, if you know anything about China, we're going to be going to Beijing, flying into Beijing, and then lectures in Xi'an, Chengdu, Guangzhou, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Ningbo, and Xiamen, and then to Taiwan, and then doing quite a wonderful group of people in Taiwan. We just love working with Taiwanese people. They're so different in a way from Westerners, in a sense. I mean, I have this feeling of them really, it's such a group-oriented kind of mentality. They love cooperating. They love working together on this. They're creating this World Peace Diet Asia tour. They want all four countries, China, Taiwan, Vietnam, and Singapore, to have the same logo and have the same, have a website and have all the events in one place where everybody can, from all the different countries, can see it. So anyway, they're enthusiastically creating it, which I'm sure is going to be a wonderful series of events in Taipei and Taichung and other cities in Taiwan. And then we'll be going to Vietnam to do some lectures there, in Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City, and then to Singapore, and then to Hawaii for the some events there, including the training. So, and then we'll be back, mid-December. So that's how the World Peace Diet lecture tour is shaping up. If you know anyone in these areas, of course, let them know. And I do have somebody who's raised their hand, so I'd like to go ahead and respond and unmute. And then, if it works in this time, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the article that I recently wrote that's been published, and the intersectionality work that I'm also going to be speaking on for the Brighton Veg Fest in a couple of weeks. So, but first, let's unmute. So this is someone, it looks like area code 317. I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone. Hello.
Hi, this is Ann Mitchell. I was in the Cincinnati training.
Oh, Ann. Hi, Ann. Right, sure. Hi.
Yeah, how you doing?
Great. Good to hear your voice. You're back in Indianapolis, I guess.
Yes, back in Indianapolis. And I just, as I was listening to you talking about permaculture, I converted our entire lot, so a regular city lot, 75 feet by 150 feet, including the house, but I converted the entire thing to a garden.
Great.
Food for humans, food for hummingbirds, butterflies, birds, you know, just lots and lots of plants, tons of plants. But I had a couple of years ago, a couple of permaculture experts, quote unquote, come over to help me figure some things out. And, you know, I have fruit trees, I have vegetables, I have flowers, I have berries, I have all sorts of things. And they said it's perfect except for the fact that you don't have animals. And I said, really? You don't think I have animals? And, well, and we have two companion dogs. And they said, well, your dogs don't count. And I said, no, no, no. Besides the dogs, you don't think we have animals? And they said, well, no, you don't have chickens, you don't have goats, you don't, you know. And I said, are you looking at the birds? Are you looking at the worms in the ground? Are you looking at the raccoons and possums that come out and steal my vegetables? Are you looking at, you know, the turtles that come in and the dragonflies and the bees and the, and they just, they both looked at me and I said, I only use leaf and mushroom compost, except that I have all these other animals. So I actually am using manure, except I don't, it's not from farmed animals. It's from the animals that come in. I mean, we have, we can sit from sunup to sundown. I have hummingbirds. I have 15 different varieties of birds. I have huge numbers of butterflies and moths, including hummingbird moths. I mean, when you create something like this, lots of animals come in, but you don't have to control them. They come because they want to come, and they contribute to the whole ecosystem, and it's just a cool thing. So that's my answer to you have to have animals. I do have animals. I have lots of animals.
Right. Gosh, that's so great. I mean, that's just so beautiful to hear you say that. And I know that the Chantry and Lorena, who have like, you know, a huge area, 100 acres, and they have lots of animals too. And they would say, they would love what you're saying, because that's basically what they were saying. There's so many animals there, and there's so much food pouring out of this place. You know, it's a whole ecosystem that is supporting life. You know, it's supporting a whole web of life, and it stands in such stark contrast to these monocrop fields where, you know, people are growing food for human and animal consumption, where nothing, it doesn't support any animals. And any animal that try to live there, they're trying to get killed, you know. So it's really beautiful. And thank you for, it sounds like you were planting some vegan seeds for those permaculture people.
Oh, I hope so. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
But just as I was listening, there is an answer to that. The answer is, we support lots of animal life. It just isn't human controlled.
Yeah,
and
exactly. We're not right. We're not supporting them for our own benefit. We're supporting them for their benefit.
Well, really. But it also support. I mean, many of those animals
benefit,
also
yeah.
support what
right.
I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's so cool to watch the incredible in a city lot. I mean, I live in the city, and people will walk out on our screen porch and they just go, oh my God. And then, and there's squirrels and chipmunks and mice and, you know, there's huge numbers of other animals that live here that mostly, I am annoyed with the raccoons and the possums that steal my tomatoes. I will admit to that.
You're creating a habitat, really. It's what it is.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And neighborhood kids, I mean, we found, last year we found a worm that was 14 inches long, and they thought it was a snake. And it wasn't. It was a worm. It was just this huge earthworm. And
wow.
they screamed, and I was like, it's a worm, and he's working. Put him back. Let him go. Don't,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
But that's my answer to the permaculturalists that say you have to have animals. I have plenty. I have
right,
plenty
right.
of animals here working, doing good work for me and for them. And it
right.
all works.
Well, thanks so much, Ann, for that great reminder and that great story. I think we all need to hear that. As more and more of us are growing our own food, you know, there's this idea that it's never going to work unless you have animals in there, and that's an old part of the animal agriculture myth. We need them. We can't survive without protein and meat and manure. You know. So, great. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Talk to you later. Yeah. Yeah. I remember, you know, Madeline and I also went a few times to the university. It's actually Maharishi University in Iowa, you know, which is really in the, as you know, in the Corn Belt. And there's a guy there named Lonnie. He's a professor of permaculture. And the great news is he's a vegan. And he sponsored and paid for our talks. And he knows a lot about permaculture. He teaches permaculture. And he says you don't need animals. You can do permaculture without animal inputs. And I think this is a really important point that needs to be emphasized, learned, explored, studied, and demonstrated more and more. Thriving gardens, like we saw at the way Chantry and Lorena is in London, Ontario. Now they've got like 30 years of time, and they don't have to work on building the soil. The soil naturally builds itself because there's more. You know, the trees. When you create a real food forest and the tree cover is falling all the time, that's building the soil. And so you can grow in the understory, you can grow vegetables, fruits, and berries and things. So I think it's just a matter of remembering the ancient wisdom of gardening and also of teaching ourselves how to do this and supporting each other in this. And so thanks. Thanks so much for that. And Mitchell. All right. And if anyone else has any thoughts, feel free to share them. So I'd like to, I do want to say a few words about a couple of things that just came across in the last few days. One, you know, there's certain basic questions that come up. It was really funny, like the other day, someone we just finished up with a lecture in Ann Arbor to quite a large group of people, and a woman at the very end came up and said to me, just sort of in passing, well, but you know, we have eyes in the front of our head, and only predators have eyes in the front of our head. Herbivores are prey animals, and they always have eyes on the side of their head. So we must be predators because we have eyes in the front of our head. And I thought, gosh, you know, that old saying by Voltaire, he said, if we believe absurdities, we will commit atrocities. And these absurdities, you know, are just ridiculous. So I just asked her, I said, well, what about primates, you know, other primates? We share, they're basically plant-based eaters. Fruit eaters like gorillas, our closest relatives are gorillas, bonobos, which eat virtually zero meat, and chimpanzees maybe 1 or 2% of their diet is animal flesh. So we all have our eyes straight in the front of our head. She didn't know what to say. She said, "Oh, you don't know who I am." She said, "I thought, oh, no, not. Now I guess I've." Crossed the wires of some high professor there, something I'm not sure, but I mean the official stories are so thick, and that's one of the official stories. And since we have eyes in the front of our head, then I guess it's what's eating meat. I mean, it's so funny how people grasp at any possible straw, and even these well-educated people supposedly. Will grasp at these kinds of straws. It makes me just, you know, I more or less, you know, smile about it, but on the other hand, I kind of you know, just wail and cry inside, because I know that that kind of rationality means stabbing more animals. You know, it's such violence. I wanted to, we got a couple of people that raised their hands. I suddenly realized, so let me go ahead and I'll get to these other things. That's good. Okay, so this is someone. I'm just going to unmute your phone. I'm not sure it says anonymous, so hello, anonymous.
Ooh, I'm anonymous. This is Davi.
That's what it says. It's who?
It's Davi. It's Daviana.
Davi. Hi, Daviana. Yes, hello.
How are you? I just wanted to say hello and thank you and put in my 2 cents, because when Anne was talking, that's something that we sort of share in common, the whole permaculture thing and
yes.
The Lorax Community Project that I've been running since around 2008. I founded that around the basis of permaculture, but also I think the term she was looking for is one that I use quite often when I give talks on this, which is synergistic sharing. The whole idea behind planting things that draw in certain animals, like if you plant things for the pollinators will come. There are things that you can put in to bring animals who will keep other animals that you don't want there to eat all your stuff out, or at least keep them in check. You know, you bring
right.
in everybody so that they're synergistic sharing, and it is benefiting us as well as them. It's for everyone. So I felt the need to put that out there, and also to say thank you so much for doing this. I was really pleased to find your email in the nick of time. And
great.
I'm actually going to reply to you and send you some links, because there are some things that I wanted to share with you, and we just didn't have the time. So thank you so much for doing this.
Right. Great. All right. Thanks, Davi, for adding that crucial point of synergistic sharing. I really appreciate it. All right. Talk to you later. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Be well.
Beautiful. Thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye. Okay. And then we have, I noticed now Lily has got something to say. But thanks. That was Davi, who was just at the facilitated training we did in Cincinnati. And it's great to hear her voice. So let's see here. Lily, are you there? You can see. Hello? I don't know if I did this properly. Let me try again.
Hi, Will.
All right, gotcha.
Hello. Will, thank you. I want to thank Anne for her story and the way she handled that. That was so beautiful. I was riveting and bubbling to hear that beautiful story of what she's done right in the middle of the city in her own community. That is so inspiring.
Isn't it? Yeah, I agree.
I just wanted to just bring something up because you triggered something. A question that I had, and I didn't know if I should even mention it, but I wonder if you heard about this. When you said, when you gave the Voltaire, if people believe absurdities, they will perform atrocities. And one of my friends who comes to World Peace Diet Sunday, by the way, I'd love to have Anne come and share that on World Peace Diet Sunday. Maybe we can, you know, tell her that she can get there and she could come and share that beautiful story. I mean, it will inspire people. It's very inspirational. But anyway, one of my wonderful, steady people who comes every week, and for years now she's been coming to World Peace Diet Sunday, called me and told me that she saw something that was really, really seemed absolutely absurd. And it was Nova. Have you heard about Nova putting out Nova, which is on public television? And Nova has put out a book or some writing saying that being vegan, and Nova, people trust Nova, right? It's public television, right?
Oh, yeah, right.
Saying that being vegan isn't really the best way, isn't really the best way for this planet to go in order to save the planet. And they've come out with this book on it, and I know nothing about it because I haven't read the book, but I'm just getting this. So when she called me, I said, well, let's look and see who sponsors Nova and who sponsors PBS. And she read off a list of some of the most atrocious companies and corporations on the planet, including McDonald's and Arby's and Merck and all the, you know, the pharmaceuticals and all these things that are just together in cahoots. And I said, well, there it is. That's why they wrote the book, because they want that kind of, they want to be funded by this, and they figure they can really be funded by these giant behemoth corporations. So I just wanted to say that. Had you heard about that book thing? And it has Nova endorsing it, or either endorsing it or writing it. But I was bristling until I realized, oh, I get it. You know, it's just, public television is not innocuous. Public television is just as corrupt as the regular television, as commercial television. Do you have anything to say about that, Will? Have you heard about it?
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Lily, for that. And for everyone, we have some people on the call who are, I guess, kind of new because people who just went through the training in Cincinnati, and I think you may know what Lily's talking about World Peace Diet Sunday. Every Sunday, Lily conducts a reading of the World Peace Diet, and then it's followed by a discussion. And if you go to worldpeacediet.com and click on the upcoming events, right at the top of the page is the number and the access code. It's at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, every Sunday. So it's a wonderful community, and highly recommended if you can contribute to that or be part of that.
And we're just about to celebrate our third year since I started this, and it's
right,
wonderful. Hoping to have you and
third
Madeline
reading.
On the show.
Yes,
when we celebrate 3 years, I'll talk to you about it. But
right. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I know you're just getting into, I think, chapter 12 now, if I understand, which is great. But the point you're making is very true, and I hadn't heard about what you're talking about. I did get an email from this wonderful guy in Japan who writes me now and then, and he was upset about an article that has recently been promoted on NPR, which is also considered sort of this public radio, I guess, radio, and it was probably saying the same thing. It was I did read the article. It was a study done by several academics who were basically saying that, if in their opinion, vegan, the world, we could feed more people if we didn't go totally vegan. If, we went somewhat vegan, but we still had some animals, that would be better. We'd be more efficient to, have some animal agriculture. And I looked a little bit at the people who actually did the study, and that was a big, tip to me, because it was the main guy, the grandfather, the guy. It was one guy, and then some of his students, and he is a professor of, a world-renowned expert in alfalfa production, which of course is an animal grain, and so. I think there's a lot of factors at play. I also wrote to Richard Oppenlander, who's really working hard. He's written some great books, and he's really an expert on the intricacies of animal agriculture and the environmental impact of animal agriculture and the inefficiency of animal agriculture, and also what academics are doing. And I asked him if he knew about this study, which is getting a lot of play on public radio. And he did write. He wrote back to me and said that he's aware of it, and it's the usual baloney. He said it's the usual case of complete inaccuracies, and he's working to try to create, I guess, with a group of people, a central, like a clearinghouse, where we can have access to responses to these kinds of articles that are coming to there. The industry is pushing back, obviously, and with films like Cowspiracy and just the general raising of awareness, and studies that are done showing how wasteful animal agriculture is for land and water and petroleum and everything else, there's going to be some pushback, because these are enormously powerful industries and they do not like this. And one of the big tragedies I've seen myself over the last 20 years, it's just that as governmental funding for universities and also for public radio and public television has basically dried up in a lot of ways, and so just because of budget problems and things, and so corporations have just moved right in to fill that gap, and so the research and the teaching at universities has become so horribly compromised by this massive infusion of funds from corporations and financial institutions that have an agenda. And the same thing has happened with NPR and with public television, public radio. And I remember, years ago, I used to listen to public radio, and I haven't had a TV, so I couldn't do that, but I remember, listening to public radio and thinking, yeah, it's pretty good, and it's pretty, it's not too bad. But every once in a while I listen now, and I just think it's just absolutely toxic. I mean, it's just the voice of corporate America. It's all it is. It's the voice of corporate America. They have the money, and that's what it is. It's not, they just propagate the official stories with very little, maybe a tiny bit of a token here and there, but I don't think we're going to get that's been pretty much colonized by the large corporations, like you say, and you did the right thing, I think, Lily, just to look at who's funding. And I think, quite honestly, the animal agriculture industry is absolutely dead set against the spreading of the vegan message, of course. But what I've realized, who's just as dead set, maybe even more dead set, is the pharmaceutical medical industry. They have huge resources, and they aren't so obvious about it, but they're definitely pushing very hard to keep meat and dairy front and center in people's plates. And so that's basically it. I think that answers it, and it makes it difficult for us, because most people trust especially public radio and public TV. This is a power, and schools. Schools are the same thing. They have dairy industry and meat. They've been going into schools, for decades, and getting people at a very young age to trust the message that meat and dairy are good for you, and to trust the academics. And the whole system is corrupt, and so we're having to kind of do our own style of education, where we're getting to people in alternative ways and being creative. We're doing that. So thanks, Lily. That's all I can say about that at this point, but I think it's great to be aware of it. And I'll try to have a look at that. I'll Google that Nova so I can see exactly what it is, if it's the same thing or if it's something else.
Oh, thanks, yeah. Will. And I just want to say that it's my wonderful Christina who brings a lot to my attention, because I'm not online. And I want to know, because other people on the World Peace Guide Sunday might know, and I'm glad that I could tell them. I used to trust public television and Nova, and all this is the latest up-to-date thing. No way. Thanks.
Right. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Lily. Okay, and then we have also someone's raised their hand from Massachusetts, our good friend. Let me see if this works here. Okay. Dorothy, are you there?
Hi,
Dorothy.
How are you?
Oh, good. Great. Yeah, so nice to hear your voice. How are you?
I'll tell you, Will. I'm enjoying listening to your CD, and it has opened up so many things to me, and I'm such a newbie at speaking about being vegan, but I did have the opportunity last night, because there was a conversation going on about let's talk about hate, and it was at the Unity Church, and I went to it, and they had the director of the Gandhi Institute of Nonviolence from Rochester, New York. And,
oh, yes.
Yeah, Kim Miller, and she was wonderful. But, wow, it was scary for me to, like I said, how am I going to frame this? Because they're talking about nonviolence.
Yes.
And then I said, I'm going to use the taboo. So I started, I just brought up, I'm going to talk about a taboo subject, whole food, plant-based, and being vegan. Well, thank goodness it was well-received, because tomorrow I'm going to go to Hartford, Connecticut, because I want to hear what Stephen Dynan is going to be talking about. He wrote the book Sacred America, Sacred World, and he is the founder and CEO of the Shift Network.
Right.
And he was also part of the Noetic Studies. So
yes.
I'm going to go and listen, and because he's considered an evolutionary leader, and to hear what he has to say. And if I don't hear anything being said about the violence towards animals, I will speak up. But I want to say it takes my breath away.
I know. Oh, gosh, that's so great, Dorothy. I mean, it's so great that you were able to speak up at that conference on the Gandhi Institute people, because that's, you know, it's infuriating in a way to sit there and listen to them talking on and on about, you know, nonviolence and love and caring, and not saying a word about the actual main way that we're causing violence and misery and devastation on this planet, which is really through our food choices that not only cause such suffering to animals, but also to hungry people and to workers. And that it's like you say, you know, I think it was good to say that. It's a taboo. I'm going to break the great taboo and actually mention this. and it'll be interesting to see about Stephen. Yeah, if you can, you know, get up your courage and say a few words, just to plant the seed, because he, you know, he actually invited me to speak on the Shift Network promoting veganism a couple of years ago in their big whatever it was, Summer of Peace, I think it's called. And my talk on where I really brought in violence towards animals as a driving force in the violence in the world, and compassion for animals is the key aspect to peace, got a huge volume of positive comments. But then the following year, I was not invited to speak again. They just didn't have any vegan. They had like 30 people. I was a token vegan the year I was there, but then the next year, they didn't have any vegan at all, anybody close to being vegan. So I'm not too pleased with Stephen Dynan on that level. I think he, you know, he's kind of going out of his way to avoid the vegan thing. And maybe, you know, because he thinks it's not popular and he's trying to build his ratings or whatever it is, but I think it would be great if you could plant a seed while you're there. It'd be wonderful.
I definitely will, because I cannot go someplace and sit there and not be authentic to myself anymore, you know, and not stand up for what I believe in and what is true when something is. Think. And I'm finding this out. Real, I had no idea that from having you here this coming summer that it would have caused such a huge transformation within me, and has truly opened me up to connecting all the different dots and seeing it. So I'm filled with gratitude. And instead of getting scared, as you said, you could get overwhelmed because it's so pervasive. But what is so beautiful, you said that your meditation and you doing good works and focusing on that keeps you from all this other heaviness and disappointment and huge sadness, you know, what is happening. So I'm following your words.
That's wonderful, Dorothy. It's so great to hear you're taking these the message to heart and learning. And I know the feeling. You know, you're in this whole room, and it's like, you know, there's maybe, you know, a few hundred people, and they're all subconsciously, you know, saying, "Don't talk about that. Don't talk about that." But when you do, it just creates the opportunity for something fresh to come in, and you've really made a contribution. You know, it's a beautiful thing. It takes courage to speak up when nobody wants to hear it, you know, but to just do it anyway. And the animals, if they were there, they would be really grateful. So thank you. That's wonderful.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And future generations too. Great. Thanks so much, Dorothy. Okay, we have another person with her hand up. This is Marlene. Let me see if I can unmute Marlene's phone. Hi, Marlene. How are you?
Hi, Will. Thank you very much.
Oh, good. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. You too. And also Madeline's voice as well. I have one quick announcement and then one question.
Yeah.
Tomorrow on my radio show in Massachusetts, Vegan Nation, World Peace Diet facilitator Joanna Blad is going to be interviewed, and that is anyone can listen anywhere in the world on the online live stream, which is wcuw.org. That's wcuw.org, and that's 12:30 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow. And this is going to lead into my, and that's 91.3 FM on the radio in Central Massachusetts. And we're going to discuss the Be Fair, Be Vegan billboard campaign in New York City, and that leads me to my question. Okay.
Okay, great. Yeah, the Be Fair, Be Vegan billboard campaign, which we talked about, I think, last week, which is last month, which is a wonderful example of getting the word out there. Yeah, go ahead. What's your question?
Is, as much as I know we're all on different paths, I'm starting to get a little disillusioned with the mainstream, very influential, very wealthy animal welfare organizations who are ignoring the campaign, which is really ignoring veganism. And so in Massachusetts, November 8th, there's a ballot for the Massachusetts State House, which is initiated by all these welfare organizations, which includes very, I don't want to say names, but very popular farm sanctuaries, as well as animal, quote, unquote, welfare organizations. And
right.
It's all pretty much to purchase, it doesn't promote veganism, it's really promoting purchasing animal products locally and avoiding the factory farm. So I wanted to ask your opinion on that, of these organizations ignoring a very clear vegan message, age of veganism.
Yes, it seems to me somehow it broke up a little bit. So your question is what my opinion is of the these large organizations and their approach to promote a welfare legislation rather than a vegan message. Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, okay, so basically what I'll say about that is that I think, in a way, it's easy to get angry with them for doing that. I mean, or be maybe not angry, or maybe disappointed is a better word, or disillusioned is a good word, like you said. But in a way, you know, this is to be expected, because they're large organizations that have a broad donor base. Many of the people are eating meat, and so they're, you know, when these organizations, as they evolve, as they grow, they more and more become about themselves, you know, and less become really about what they originally were founded for. They become about their success as an organization, and it's pretty competitive. I mean, they're competing for, you know, anyone who cares about animals for those dollars, and so they want to try to show that they're using the dollars well, that they're having success, that they're challenging norms and so forth. But I've been saying now more and more that I think that the real lifeblood of the animal protection movement, the animal liberation movement, the vegan movement, is the local groups that are smaller, more connected to the grassroots, and more able to really build vegan community at the local level. The larger groups, I think, in many ways, are sort of sucking money and energy from the movement for their own benefit. They do some good, I think. I mean, I think they do some educational and legislative work that maybe is helpful. But the thing is, even if, you know, I like people say how much they don't like HSUS, for example, because of how welfare they are and so forth. But what I say is, well, okay, so say you don't like HSUS. U.S. And so say you have a magic wand, and say you can then, with your magic wand, you're all-powerful, Lord of the Universe, you're going to just get rid of it, get rid of HSUS. So you wave your magic wand, and you just destroy HSUS. You don't like them. Now they're gone. But then, okay, good, but quite honestly, within another 6 months, they'll be right back again. Because there, you know, there are, just that's how it is. I mean, there are literally millions of people who love animals, who eat meat, who want to give money to protect animals, and they will create an organization that'll do that. That loves, who loves animals and protects them and does welfare things and they can give their money to and feel good about it, who will not challenge them personally to go vegan too much because then they would, you know, start giving their money. So, so that's just the reality of the situation. And I think it's kind of like, you know, the way it is. So we shouldn't really expect these organizations necessarily. It would be nice if they would support something like the beautiful billboard campaign in New York City, but it's a little too radical for them, so they're not going to, and they want to put their energy into the things that are going to bring, they're going to have a return on their investment, essentially, because that's what they are. They're organizations that really require, they look at everything, you know, mainly really from a funding point of view. Campaigns are ways to raise funds, and you know, I'm sure they would say, well, to raise awareness, but that's true, perhaps. But I think, you know, personally, that the deeper education of vegan living is going to be a transformation of our society is not going to happen from these large organizations. You know, it's going to happen from individuals like you creating Vegan Nation and bringing Joanna Bladd on to talk about the actual nuts and bolts of how we can share and live and cooperate and be kind and compassionate and respectful to each other and to animals, and have that go out to people as they're driving their cars. And you're not trying to manipulate people in order to raise funds. You know, you're just speaking your truth. And I think that's, you know, Gandhi always emphasized satyagraha, you know, speaking truth, the power of truth. And so as we build a movement that's strong at the grassroots with people speaking their truths and cooperating and working together locally and on the internet and all the ways that we can, that's really decentralized, then it's not easily co-opted, because they, you know, these large organizations in the meat and dairy and pharmaceutical industries really go after these larger organizations because they can kind of, you know, they can see where they can go after. But when you have a decentralized movement of lots of people just sharing ideas and, you know, millions of points of light, there's nobody they can go after. It's just growing, and that's really the future. So I think it's fine in a way that these big corporate organizations don't support us. I mean, we shouldn't really depend on them anymore anyway. We have to create our own movement and do our own thing. And I think that's exciting. You know, that's really where the future lies, I think. And so I want to just encourage you to keep doing what you're doing and all of us to support these kind of grassroots efforts.
Thank you, Will.
Oh, thanks. Yes, thanks so much. Yeah, it's a great question. Okay, we have one more. We have time. Oh, my gosh, we're already over time. Catherine, our good friend Catherine from South Bend. Let me see. I just clicked. Are you there, Catherine? Try again here.
Hello, Will. Do you hear me?
Oh, yes, I do. Sure.
Great.
Yeah.
And hello, everyone. It's good to hear every sharing. And I won't say much. Very quickly, this was a follow-up to what Dorothy said. At Notre Dame this week, they had a major conference that lasted 4 days, and it was called Sustainable Wisdom, Integrating Indigenous Know-How for Global Flourishing. So people were talking about, you know, there were Native Americans there, and it was somewhat academic, but also a little more experiential. And very painful for me, because I thought maybe there would be some kind of awareness. For instance, there was a professor called Bruce Johanson, University of Nebraska. He's very well known in the field, and He's even nicknamed Dr. Doom because he talks about climate change in a very dramatic way and doesn't foresee much good coming out of our human activity. So he kept on talking about CO and gas emissions and all of that. So I gathered up my courage and went to the microphone after he had spoken and asked him in all his work, where does he situate animal agriculture? And he said, oh, yes, he does talk about it, but that's all he said. Actually, he just doesn't do any of that. And I think he wanted to avoid embarrassment. But, Dorothy, I can feel your heart pounding, because mine pounds, too, when I come up and ask a question that may be unsettling.
Right, exactly. That's the whole thing. It is like, this is the elephant in the room you're not supposed to talk about. And you go up there and you talk about it, and it's like they just look at you like, no, that's a ridiculous question. We're not going to answer that.
Right, exactly.
It's difficult. It's very difficult. Yeah.
Well,
and many of the people. Yeah, go ahead.
But then you're coming to Notre Dame next week, and then we have a nice evening event with you and Madeleine, and we're so looking forward to this. And unfortunately, in our area, there are no veg restaurants, not even vegetarian, but we have two vegan chefs preparing little finger foods for after the presentation in the evening. So that will be really nice, showing our community that we have vegan chefs.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's definitely a beginning.
Yes, it is, and we're looking forward to that.
Great. Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for sharing your heart-pounding moment there with us, because it's important. All right. Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you.
So, we're really at our time, and I will maybe next month we'll talk more about I just have this thing to talk about, this vision of materialism, herderism, and the intersectionality of oppression, and I wanted to talk for a few minutes about some of those ideas, how they fit together, but I think we'll talk about it next month. And if you have any bring any other questions or concerns we have together to that call, we really have to now, I think, wrap it up. So it's just been wonderful to be able to share this time with everyone. I want to thank all of you for being on the call and for the support that you're showing for the vegan movement in your daily lives, and the animals, I'm sure if they could thank you, they certainly would. This is the blessing that we get, I think, in a sense, from doing the best we can to help animals and future generations and ecosystems and other, and really in all of us, other people, is just a sense that we're somehow fulfilling our purpose on this earth, our mission for this lifetime. And even if we don't get a lot of support or whatever it is from the mass culture, at least we'll know that as we stand at that moment when we look back on our life, that we're doing something worthwhile and we're growing and learning. And the vegan movement really requires us, I think, to be effective advocates, that we also do the inner work of cleansing and purifying and living our ideals as best we can in our daily lives with the people we share our lives with. If we can be kind and loving with those who are close to us, and continue to advocate for animals through our actions and our thoughts and words and whatever kind of creativity that we can allow to flow through us, then I think we're fulfilling our destiny in a beautiful way and being inspiration to other people, perhaps more than we're aware. So much love to everyone. Thank you all so much for joining us. Feel free to be in touch with me anytime during the month. If you have any thoughts or questions or concerns or anything you want to bring up for next month. And we'll be getting together in October. The third Thursday is the 20th. So we'll be back, actually, if all goes well, in our home in San Francisco, north of San Francisco, Northern California. And right, and then that weekend is the Edgefest in London, which is a huge event. I'll be speaking there via Skype on intersectionality. So maybe we'll talk about that then too. So lots of things have been happening. Feel free, if you can, please, to go through. I didn't even have a chance to go through the resources for this week, excuse me, for this month. Lots of very interesting things. So many interesting things. Oh, my goodness. So, oh, my gosh, this orthorexia nervosa, just as I predicted in the world peace diet, it's growing. But anyway, there's lots of great things happening, and 1,000 people in Geneva protesting for the rights of animals, and lots of great things. So check out some of those links if you have a chance. And now I'm going to kind of officially bring our time to a close and play a short piece of music to go out on. Maybe just in light of let's see here, what's a good one? Maybe the calves. Beautiful calves. They have such a hard, tragic life in our society. But we send them our love and appreciation. Bless you all. Much love and thanks for being the light that lights up our world.